On this week's show, a change in schedule with Nitin Bhandari from Planera. All right, Nathan Wood, welcome back to the show. It's good to see you, buddy.
Yeah, long time no see.
It's been a little while. Something's up with that mustache, though. What you got going on here?
Don't worry. It's not here. It's only for Halloween today. So getting ready for my costume, as I do every year.
You go to full send. So what's your full send here? What is it all about?
It started with our 8-year-old. She wanted to be Wednesday. That's a big one this year. So she is Wednesday, and we are completing the Addams Family. So I'm going to be shaving a little bit thinner after this to be Gomez. And then we got Morticia and then little Pugsley. My 5-year-old is going to be Pugsley. So yeah, we got the whole outfit together.
I have to say, knowing little Charlie, he is going to be a good Pugsley. There is a little mischievousness in there, and you're right, if you're going to Gomez, you need to get a little more pencil.
It's definitely getting thin.
You're going to have to do that. You're here. We know everybody's not watching the show on Halloween. This will be a couple weeks from it, but just so you know, we record a little bit ahead. Nitin, welcome to the show, man.
Thanks, Jeff. It's great to be here. Big fan of the show. Good to see you as well, Nathan.
Excited to have you. We're going to dive into it because I think you're into some really interesting things right now. But before we do, you guys know the rules here. Check us out on youtube.com/@thecontentcrew. Do you know to follow the Content Crew webpage on LinkedIn? Because, you know, we like to send out them snippets there, and every once in a while we send something we get anywhere else. So make sure you follow us and our guests on LinkedIn.
Are you trying to reach the innovators and decision makers in construction technology? Then look no further than sponsoring the Contech Crew. That's right, we're taking new advertisers. Email us at advertising@thecontentcrew.com to learn more.
Nitin, I always ask this of anybody building anything in this crazy construction technology world. Why did you roll up your sleeves and try anything in the construction tech world? Tell us a little bit about you and why.
Such a great way to start. I'm an electrical engineer by background. So, you know, I started working on hardware stuff. My dad has been building hardware stuff as well all his life. So I grew up working in his factory. So I loved the physical world. Then as hardware world was kind of all moving to Taiwan and China, me and my co-founder became software entrepreneurs. So we did 2 software companies leading up to this. Both were very successful, thank God. And then as I was thinking about what to do next, my co-founder now, who's a general contractor for 35 years, like 3 houses down, our kids go to the same school, we've known each other for a very long time, he started pulling me in. He's like, I know you're gonna do one more startup, and just listen to my problems. I'm like, yeah, sure, I'll be your IT guy, I'll listen to your problems, I'll find solutions, right? And for most of the things, there were solutions out there. But this scheduling thing just coming up, I sat in all his meetings, schedule reviews, bid reviews, and the schedule thing just coming up, where the disconnect between people who know how to build a job versus people who know how to run the schedule was just too much, right? The silos were just crazy. And I couldn't find a good solution. So I had him take me to like 10 of his other peers, and 10 out of 10 were struggling with this problem. And so I was like, okay, large enough industry, the built world, and there's no good solution. So let's go try and solve this.
I really like that, because you went down the path of looking at the problem, had somebody in the co-founder now who, you know, was experiencing and living it. And that's constantly what we say in this industry, right? The products must be built out of the problems. And it's interesting because I met the team a couple of years ago and I've been talking to them, because as I was looking at my own next leap and where was I going to go after leaving the last company, I was looking for the problem areas as well. And I will tell you, schedule kept coming up over and over and over. And for me, you know, it wasn't where my heart was, just given I didn't understand it, but it absolutely was a huge problem. And so I'm interested. Okay, so you take a look at it, and there are some incumbents in the world, but, you know, again, I applaud you for going down this route, because the one thing I did learn, and I think it's, I'm just going to say it from my perspective, it's almost a business in and of itself. Like, it's not that you can be a construction scheduler. It's that you can actually use a specific tool. And that is how you define yourself, which is an amazingly interesting problem to have. So talk to me about, you know, how you went down the route, what you're building at Planera.
Before I go into that, I must say, sometimes it's good to be naive. I was a construction industry outsider, so I think I was naive enough to take on this challenge. Maybe if I knew too much, I wouldn't have taken up this challenge. So
I think if you knew what I knew, you might not have chosen it, but you have, so we're here.
Right, here we are. It's almost like scheduling right now is more about learning how to press a whole lot of complicated sequence of buttons as opposed to like being in the job, feeling what's going on in the field and like reacting to it and coming up with recovery plans, right? That's our vision, is that scheduling should be so approachable and it should be so easy. The UI and the mechanics of scheduling should be so easy that you're really focusing on the business outcomes you want to generate from scheduling, right? So we need to elevate everybody to that level. And so we want to make scheduling democratized, meaning more and more people should touch the schedule, not just one or two people, but, you know, 10, 15 people in a job should be touching the schedule. It should be used more as a business decision tool. My co-founder often says, hey, schedule for us is a compliance tool, right? It's either a shield or a sword, right? Either I'm going to defend myself with it or I'm going to hit someone with it, right? And what we want to do is we want to make it a business decision tool, right? So you're making good business decisions, not monthly, not episodically, but every day using the schedule.
I will say right now, every ingrained scheduler I know out there probably actually doesn't listen to the show, so they're probably not doing it right now. But they will shake in their boots at you saying any more than the one person that they have taken that shield and sword and knighted them to touch the buttons is allowed into the schedule. That thing is pristine and you cannot touch it. So it's really interesting to hear you talk about democratizing it. Talk about using it as a business decision tool, because it isn't. It has always been. It's funny, when I was in estimating before and working on the pre-con side, it was like, that's what they said, is they went to every meeting ready to fight their way out with the system they were bringing. It's the same thing. You're going into every one of those meetings deciding, am I going to pull out the sword or the shield to protect myself or to attack? And you're trying to change that.
To be clear, Jeff, I don't think I'm going to change the industry overnight, right? And so I think that it is, end of the day, still a contract document, right? And so we built Planera so that there's layers to it, right? And at the end of the day, it is a contract document. Money will change hands based on what's reflected in the schedule, right? And so we're not that naive, right? Like, so we give the ultimate power to that one or two people who need to know what gets reflected into the schedule. But that doesn't mean you need to actually run the job on Excel or actual little sticky notes on a whiteboard.
I need to pause this. Pause for a second.
Good thing I have all my notes. This is really good.
Hopefully you remember right where you were at, Nitin. You've built it. It's contractual, but you built it so it's got there. And then finish what you were saying. We'll cut it together. And Nathan, I want you to jump in and ask about that CPM piece there.
Oh, I have so many things before that, but okay.
So we built it so that you can also run your job daily, make good decisions, but also it's very mindful of the fact that it is a contract document, and what gets reflected in it when it goes to owners for submittal, etc., respects your business processes.
Yeah, it's awesome. It's kind of balancing both. Nathan?
That's been the challenge. That's why this is such a sticky subject, is you mentioned the, you know, pristine or you know, this well-protected CPM schedule, and as a BIM, as an operations person, I go, well, yeah, but that's just fake, right? Because the reality is in the sticky notes. Reality is in kind of what's happening on the ground. And like kind of that connection between the two has always been the challenge. And so I guess, is that where you attacked first? Or how have you kind of navigated that bubble of, yeah, both what I would call, yeah, like upfront the planning, the digital planning, which is the sticky notes, the more micro level versus the actual schedule, which is that contract CPM. Yeah, how are you tackling that?
I'll first maybe start with an analogy and then I'll go into how we tackle it, right? Like, so there's two analogies that come to mind, but the one I'll use today is like an orchestra, right? Like you're building a job, there's a bunch of people, they all have to be coordinated. They are like an orchestra, right? And everyone's doing different things. But for it to all sound amazing, there's also sheet music and a conductor, right? And once in a while, you can have a great improv jazz band, but that's not all you need, right? So improv jazz bands can also do some good shows, but for the rest of us, we need an orchestra, sheet music, conductor, right? So think of conductor in the sheet music as a high level plan, right? It's like that's L1 to L3 schedule. And then people are doing their orchestra. They're doing a little bit of improv here. They're reacting to something that might happen, right? So that's kind of like an analogy that comes to mind. When we thought about how we're going to solve the problem, now let's make it real, right? There are many solutions that are just digitizing the field workflow, right? Hey, this is the field schedule, and we're just going to digitize that. I think if you don't have the big picture in mind, you don't often make the best decisions then, right? Yes, field is the reality, and that's not going to change. But the best experience is when your office schedule, let's call it level one to level three, your master CPM schedule, and your field schedule are connected in a way that the field still has the day-to-day authority to do what they need to do, but then there's full visibility, right? So the way we build the schedule is you can build your pursuit schedule, a very high-level schedule in Planera. You win the job, then you build your baseline. You start taking slices of that baseline, and now that becomes your field schedule, right? So you're not like recreating that. There's no double data entry. You automatically pull a bunch of activities, and then you start adding daily level of granularity in there, right? And you actualize that. And then the information flows back up seamlessly as well. So in the office, you know exactly what's going on daily basis. Then you can choose what you want reflected in the contract schedule, right? So there's full vertical traceability from level one, the highest level executive schedule, all the way to your daily, weekly, 3-week look ahead, right? And everything's in one platform. That's hard, but then that's what's magical, right? Because now you have no latency, you have a single source of like truth in terms of what's going on in the job. Then you can start building intelligence on top of that.
I feel like progression from CPM down to what's happening in the field is one challenge. And then you mentioned like that the round tripping it back, right? Then what actually happened and how does that feed historical analytics that then feeds what the next projection is going to be moving forward. And so are there customers that are taking it all the way that far yet? Or like how far are you in that? Because I mean, I know how hard that is to do.
I think most of our customers get there. They might not be there on day one, right? On day one, somebody might start just for the office or just for the field. They get comfortable with that. In a few months, they're like, oh man, but if I also did the other thing, then I get this whole dashboard and intelligence and actionable insights. And so, construction is a prove it word, right? Like we have to land somewhere, we have to prove it. And then very soon they expand to the entire full stack use case, right? And, Some start that way. I wish all did, but it's okay if you want to just start with the office or just with the field and then graduate. That's fine.
You hit on this earlier because it's truly a cultural change, right? For one or other or both, right? You'll have those classic schedulers and the CPM side that are building it out and it's do not touch it. And in many cases, they don't go back to a lot of it to bring the reality into it because that can get fuzzy and difficult. Of course, they are in certain respects, right? Because there's major delays, et cetera. They're going to bring those back in. But that was where the field felt like, well, we've got to break off and we've got to do things like Last Planner and other systems to sort of incorporate it to actually get this work done. And so it's a cultural shift, right? They originally grew the divide instead of it coming together. So when you're talking about which side you bring it into, you've got a cultural piece. I'm wondering if there's any keys or anything you've seen in that process that helps those teams break those down, because cultural change is probably the hardest thing. Software is not the hardest thing. It's the cultural change.
Most important thing for us is the fact that, as I said, end of the day, this doesn't replace a scheduler. This allows the scheduler to do their best work. I would submit that the best use of a great scheduler's time is not to look at actuals in a PDF and then type it into a P6, right? And so why wouldn't we just let superintendents who know the job, who are doing sidewalks every day, put in the actuals that just flows up so that they're just reviewing, hey, yeah, this is great. How to sequence progress? Let me go talk to the job team, like, hey, what happened? Why? Oh, that's great. Oh, maybe did you think about this or that, right? So now we're in a mode where everyone's leaning in, everyone's trying to understand the problem and solve the problem, as opposed to just wasting time in like double, triple data entry and things like that. So a lot of our customers say, hey, we have such large jobs now. We just can't physically scale if we keep doing, people put like all the actuals on a Gantt PDF, handwritten, scan it, send it. Like it just does not scale anymore, right? In this modern day and age. So what we're trying to do is just get rid of people, the grunt work, so that people can actually do the knowledge work that they're so good at.
Well, it's so funny because that was the same thing we saw in estimating, right? And the lack of skilled folks in that world and the lack of ability to have enough of them to meet the needs of the jobs, right? That's the one thing we've said is over time, we have less people, but we have tighter schedules and more complicated work to do in the end. So it's really important to be able to not be a data enterer, but manage by exception, right? You're looking through, okay, this is normal. Wait a minute, that out of sequence work, that could cause a lot of problems or could be the opportunity to find something to do better and faster for the job itself and move it forward. Like, great. Why don't we? And in a lot of cases, the field's doing things in what are considered to the schedule out of sequence when they're really not. It's the way it's always been done, right? It's just not captured.
And that's an opportunity, right? Like if you're going to replicate that WVS 24 times and in the first one, you understand, hey, we got to change this sequence. Now, what's more valuable, to understand whether this is good and then just have it get replicated 24 more times, or go and physically change things 24 times, right? Like, so I think what we're trying to get to is the act of button pushing isn't the value add. The act of having planning discussions and then reacting to problems, coming up with like two or three different scenarios of recovery and picking the right one, that's the value added work.
I feel like it, I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, it sounds like it's been a progression where it's like meeting the needs of the field that says, okay, we need to document the stuff that's happening out here of what the actuals are. And then some of those folks having that aha moment of, oh man, this is that, you know, digital multiplier opportunity where, you know, we can start to feed things back into schedule and other things. And now it's like, you're starting to tread on other people's territory and you start seeing the schedules going, you know, starting to claw back a little bit, right? But that means you're onto something, right?
Also simple things like, why shouldn't superintendents be able to know what float path certain activity is in, right? Like they're smart. And if they have to choose between this or this, because there's some site conditions and both can't happen, why shouldn't they just be able to quickly query the schedule and say, hey, which one hurts me least? Oh, well, this one is on critical path. This one has float left. When it's disconnected, when we try to dumb things down, you can't make good decisions, right? It's not that hard. Superintendents do very, very complicated things, right? You know, we don't have to coddle them. We can empower them to make good decisions when everything is connected.
Yeah, you really can. And I'm going to take us there because it's on regular construction projects, and the construction projects we've been doing over the last few years has been, you know, or last decades, you know, there's a consistency in it, but we're seeing a whole new style of work coming in, and we're seeing all of this new mission critical work, all the hyperscalers going in, all that kind of stuff. How has that impacted what you guys are doing? And what are you seeing from that angle now?
It's been great for us for two reasons. One is, it's just an amazing amount of alignment in that mission critical data center work between owners and GCs, right? Like there's like, everybody just wants everything commissioned and live as quickly as possible, right? So everything's sort of like economically incentivized to do.
Capitalism at its purest, right?
I mean, at its purest. It's amazing. The other thing is, these are complex, fast moving jobs. They're large. The paper and PDF processes just don't scale, right? Like we have data center mission critical work where 300-400 activities have to be actualized weekly, right? Like you just are not going to do it the old fashioned way, right? And so that's just amazing for transformation, right? And then what happens there hopefully like flows to all other work, right? So on our platform, we have things from multifamily homes to like airports to like airport expansions to like bridges and and highways and all sorts of stuff, right? And increasingly now we have mission critical as well. And that's just, that segment's just growing so fast that we actually raised a little more money, we capitalized the company, and now we have like a data center of excellence, so to speak, right? Where we do everything from normal onboarding for them to like embedded engineers, because they can't find schedulers, right? And so we have Planera pre-trained, pre-certified field engineers that are ready to get embedded in their teams for 3 months, 6 months, whatever it takes to make them successful, right? So owners and GCs are aligned, and now Planera is aligned, right? We're just all rowing in the same direction.
Well, I mean, that's a unique opportunity too, because I think that has a lot to do with the new owners, right? The hyperscaler owners are very, very different and more sophisticated than we've seen in the past. We've seen that impacting the technology and the space and the usage of it. Are you seeing owners involved more in the product and in that process because they care so much about it?
We have different roles built into the platform so that different personas have different views and access rights and things like that, right? And so we routinely now have, well, I won't say all owners or all GCs or all delivery models are ready for it. There are certainly delivery models where you're ready to have owner be in there as a read-only. They can take a look at it. They can look week by week what's changing. And that cuts down so much of these ceremonial meetings, right? Where you're not talking about the issue. You're just like, again, going through like mind-numbing lines of Gantt chart, right? It's all done because people come prepared with like the three things they need to discuss.
Yeah, I mean, that's been a critical component to the change in new technology. And I saw this when I was at Join. It's all about, we got to stop going over every line item and everything, and we got to focus on the decision points, and we've got to allow people to know what those are going in ahead of time. So if they have that read access only role, they have the ability to see what you're talking about and say, hey, listen, when we're coming in, there's some decisions that need to be made around, you know, some scheduled impact items, whether it's materials, whether it's crews, whatever it might have been, they can be ready to get in and make that decision, right? This goes back to Nathan, right? Digest, debate, decide. Why are we trying to do that in a 1 hour meeting when, honestly, too, we're feeding you a whole bunch of junk you don't need in the process and then trying to pull out one good decision? We can say, hey, look over, everything looks good. We're going to talk about these three things that are the outliers. So let's focus on it. I think that's going to be really good when that comes in.
On the flip side, there's trades, right? And so we have roles built in where you can bring in trades. And trades can now help you build your weekly work plan or your six-week look ahead. They collaborate. But then their role is such that they can only actualize the things that they were responsible for, and they can't mess up other trades and they can't mess up the other schedule, right? And so we have that, and that has been a huge unlock, because otherwise, again, this all would happen analog, and then somebody has to come and put it in some kind of like a software digital tool, right? That's just wasted time, right? So now as you're doing your weekly pull plan or whatever methodology, agnostic, right? Whatever your process is, but chances are you're sitting weekly with your trades and getting work ready for 4 to 6 weeks, like ahead of time, right? All that just happens. And when you're done, you're done. It's all in there.
But the metric there, again, yeah, almost methodology agnostic. I like that. Is plan percent complete is a great metric that, you know, again, it starts from the lean world, but it works anywhere of, you know, how much did you get done based on what you said or what the schedule said you should get done, and are there kind of historical trends we can see from that? And it's not meant to whip anyone. It's just meant to understand, like, do people trend to sandbag? Do people trend to, you know, over rely on something or yeah. What are the trends? So yeah, there's so much to that.
There's so many good concepts that we're just building into the platform without necessarily, when you start labeling things, people get like sometimes defensive, right? Hey, this is lean, this is last planner. There's just great concepts everywhere, right? TPC is a great concept. Variance reasons, right? If you're late, why don't you capture a variance reason, right? And so you don't have to say, I'm going to run this process to the T to get advantage of all of those concepts, right? These are just first principles, good concepts, right? So we've just baked it all into our platform.
Well, and that's key, right? Because you're talking about running massive job sites with a lot of trades. Every trade has different way of doing things or has adopted their own. And what they want to be able to do is come into a project, use the things that they're comfortable with, if they're whatever methodology they're using. But you're saying, hey, our software adapts. Just give us what you need. These are the things we need from you. It's going to make the 6-week look ahead work. It's going to make these things work better. And that's a key flexibility, right? You don't want to make that decision for them. If you make that decision for them, you're trying to fit a square peg in a round hole and trying to get everybody on a job site to do the same thing. That's just not going to happen.
We sit with our customers and we help them get standard operating procedures that get institutionalized, right? So then they have a one way of doing everything. And then they might be like, hey, in 6 months or in X number of months, we also want to roll out variance codes. Great. You can start here and you can graduate and then you can go to the next level. But it's not a on day one, it's a all or nothing, right? That just doesn't work in construction or in most industries, right? You're going to transform your business, you know, one thing at a time.
But I love the idea of different ways of viewing the same information. And I'm curious how far you've gone down that road. Because like, I know even further upstream in the CPM side of the world, like you can view things as a Gantt chart, but if they're resource loaded and you've got all your levels in there and whatnot, you can also potentially view it as a line of balance schedule where you've seen the lines going up and to the right. And you can now see like whenever those lines are crossing, like, you know, you've got trade stacking where you got multiple folks in the same room, but it's the same data. It's just looking at the same data in a different way that provides new insights from it. I mean, it seems like that's, yeah, a little bit of kind of what you're getting at is, yeah, as long as people are putting the data in, give them as many different ways to look at the data that's helpful to them.
You know, AI is such a buzzword right now, but there's things that the advantage of AI is sometimes you can just get to the crux of the matter. Like, do you really, like, does everybody have to learn line of balance to figure out the production rate aren't matching up? That's the end result. Like, what you want is our production rate's fine. Or my crew size is fine, right? And so maybe there's an opportunity to get, like, again, take the best of everything and put it all together, right? And so again, we're not talking about like ideologies of do I like line of balance or do I like CPM or do I like Gantt, right? End of the day, we're trying to create the best optimal work plan.
Yeah, well, I mean, and you opened up that can of worms, you know, you've got your... You know, it's nice that you had to prop up funding to get, you know, some of the hyperscaler work done and really focus on some services there. But what else do you have planned for the future that you think could really help out schedulers and help out folks that are, you know, going through this change?
I mean, AI is going to be big. We've taken our time. We've been very methodical about it because, you know, unlike AI for marketers or AI for salespeople, you know, we're in 100% kind of like a business, right? Like, you can't be 99% right about the schedule. You have to be 100% right about the schedule, right? And so we've built a lot of technology that allows us to now use AI so that it's whenever there's a factual question, it has to be 100% right. What we're going to do now is empower teams to then query the schedule in natural language, right? That is a huge thing. It's not that people don't understand the concept. It's just like there's so many complicated questions you could ask of a schedule that if you put everything in a UI, then you're back to this original problem, which is it becomes P6, right? And so where we think AI can help is that most common flows can go in a UI and everything else is natural language. It's the best UI we even know, right? Language is very, very, very extensible. And so we'll allow people to query facts of the schedule, but then we'll also allow people to natural language do some what ifs and some optimizations, right? But what if I run all of these excavation activities on a 6-day calendar? You could also do it manually and you could compare versions and you can see what happens, or you could just ask and 2 minutes later get an answer, right? You could say things like, hey, when are my next 3 pours, concrete pours? And then even though schedule is not perfectly named and coded, you know, we'll understand that, we'll show you, and you'll be like, hey, what if I can't pour on Thursday? What if I pour next Monday or on Sunday? What does that do to my downstream work and things like that? So ability to understand, query the schedule, ability to do meaningful kind of what-if scenarios and analysis, right? That we think will give people superpowers. And then the final thing, of course, is Give me insights. Like every time I do these updates, there's all these downstream stuff hiding there. I know cost margin erosion, right? How can I know that sooner? And how can I have some viable recovery paths, right? So that's going to be our AI strategy. It's going to start rolling out to our existing customers soon. And then throughout next year, that's something we're very excited about.
Well, I like it because it really is core to the philosophy you started with, right? You were talking about democratizing access to and working with the schedule. And even in a new system, it's not going to be open for everybody to use. But if you use that one thing that we can use, which is natural language processing, then we can. So this, I like how you say we took a focus, we took our time, because you can see that it aligns with what you've been trying to accomplish from the beginning with that democratization, but then also business decisions. Like, hey, tell me what happens if I do the pours this way? What happens if I, a problem, I can't pour on Thursday? Hey, tell me the things I don't know that are going to be impacted by that. All of a sudden, now I can make really well-informed decisions based off a true schedule that I'm interacting with, and I don't have to be perfect at it.
Tell me the cost of this impact if I wait 1 week to make that decision and then take that answer to the owner and go, Mr. Owner, this is how much it's going to cost you if we don't answer this question today. Like, this is a big deal. And this is why it's a big deal, because you got all the backup, right? Yeah, go ahead.
Important, right? Time and back. And these are all really good use cases. I'm actually really, really excited about even simple questions, right? Like, hey, what drives the start date of this activity? There's like 7 predecessors, there's constraints, there's this, there's that, right? How many times do people have that question, but they bite their tongue because they don't want to be judged by the scheduler, right? AI doesn't judge, right? You can ask them anything, right? So
but yet I still say please and thank you to it. It's kind of funny.
Yeah, just every once in a while, say please, thank you, and ask whatever you want, right? So I'm equally excited about just simple things that people, they don't have to worry about asking.
That's such an interesting angle for it too, because I never even thought about that. Like, you do feel stupid when you have to ask those questions of a person, and so now you have an opportunity to ask it of a schedule to think through it, and there is no judgment. We're always saying, like, trying to teach people when they're prompting not to say please and thank you and not to treat it like a human, because it's not human and it doesn't have those feelings. But I never thought about the vice being versa, where it's not going to say you're dumb for asking that question. No, I'm not going to give you it or judge you in any way. So you can. And I imagine there's some people in some high level positions that don't know the predecessing activities to certain things that they've been commissioning for years. And now's their opportunity to kind of understand it. Like, ooh, I always wanted to ask that. But so that's a really cool angle, man, to again, not just democratize the access to the information, but the understanding of the process itself and being able to be more educated. And we're all really worried. I'm personally worried about AI in many respects making us a bit dumber because we don't understand it. But you're saying it can make us a lot smarter if we can ask questions of it that get answers we might not have had before.
If you're inquisitive and you ask the right questions, it will certainly upskill everybody. And I mean, we all know there's a massive talent shortage in construction, right? But it's not just trades, right? It's also office. It's also like, we just aren't going to create enough P6 schedulers to meet the demand, right? And so if we can get everybody else to pitch in, right, and do a bunch of that work, that's in a way solves that sort of like that demand problem, the supply issue, right? Like there's just not enough supply and there's a ton of demand.
And you're solving it also by democratizing it and educating and upskilling everyone to have an impact, especially because there's areas of the business that don't get involved in that piece right now because of those barriers that could really bring some value. It could bring value in your knowledge of how you can do things in different orders, et cetera, or just knowing as an overall business. And I wonder this too, is there an opportunity here with Planera where you're not just looking at a single job, but you're looking at all of your jobs and you're looking across your portfolio, because that's becoming a huge issue.
Thank you for bringing that up. We actually do that today. We just talked about a job, But then if you're an executive, you know, you're running a bunch of jobs, you can now roll up both your project performance, like how's the job doing, but more importantly, like the labor and the equipment and all of that stuff, and project out what are my needs through across my portfolio of projects over the next 12 to 18 months. So customers, we've done case studies like Zachary Construction. They do all of their critical equipment planning on Planera, and then they have a good 18 to 24 month visibility for the first time ever. And that has reduced, cut their like heavy equipment mobilization dramatically. That's a lot of money saved. We already allow our customers to do portfolio level planning.
That's key, because looking at the project level is one thing, but once you can lift up and look at the portfolio level, you can uncover a lot of things. And, you know, we've said this, you know, I've heard this through multiple companies and places, is I'm running 1,000 jobs. I'm not worried about all 1,000, and I can't worry about all 1,000, but there's about 10% of them that I really need to be concerned with and I need to be focused on. And if you can look at that portfolio level and focus on those 10% projects that are really in need, and you can put your resources into the right place, you can focus. And that's where you go beyond fee erosion to like really changing your profitability for an entire year. You're not just losing a few fees. You could be go from profitable to not profitable based on those 10%.
A few jobs. Every GC, I mean, I'm not talking about the biggest ones, but most GCs are like one or two bad jobs away from bankruptcy.
And if you can see those and focus those people on those and solve those, not only can you prevent that bankruptcy, you might actually be able to turn that into 2, 3, 4% more profit, which, by the way, most of you are running on that level of a margin, that could be double.
We have routinely done analysis where at least 1% of your margin is in general conditions, fee erosion, time that you could claim, but you just couldn't justify it. Good scheduling practice can help you recover a good chunk of that. I'm not saying all of it, right? But a good chunk of it. In a low margin business, even if you recover like one third of that in a 4% margin business, that's like doing 20x more construction. Like it's an annuity that just keeps paying back every year. And so if we move scheduling from compliance tool to a business tool, the ROI is just insane.
There's so many trade contractors out there that are really frustrated and complaining about, you know, how they're being impacted, but yet the only way they can fight back is by measuring how they're impacted. But yet they don't have any mechanisms to measure how they're impacted. Guys, the tools are out there and they're not hard to use anymore. They used to be hard. That used to be a lot of work, track that stuff. It's not hard work anymore.
And then the only people that make money are the claims consultants and the lawyers.
Don't even get me started. We got another episode for that one.
Hopefully none of them listen in, because if it's up to us, there'll be a lot less of them in both areas, and a lot more of that money going back into the pockets of the trade contractors, GCs, those that should have that money. So I could take you on forever, but I love ending it right there where we can say, hey, listen, in the world, if we could get rid of more of the lawyers, more of the claims consultants, and we could more money in the back in the pockets of the people doing the work and managing the work. You said this, you know, GCs are managing a complicated orchestra, and the trades are part of that orchestra, and the material handlers and all of that are part of it. If we could put money back in all their pockets, then we done what we should.
That's something I can get excited about every morning.
And hopefully it keeps you up and going and you stay in touch with us and tell us what you're up to. But tell people how they can connect with you, Nin.
Yeah, jump to Planera, like new era of planning, planera.io. You know, hit us up, do a quick call, see if we can help you solve some of your problems. And I'm also active on LinkedIn, Nitin Bhandari. And so if you want, let's start a conversation there.
Awesome. Go check them out for sure. Nathan Wood, it's always great to sit down with you, and hopefully we can get you out the door here to go to school Halloween.
Ready for that chocolate.
Oh, yeah. Keep your kids safe tonight. Not too much chocolate for everybody. If you guys haven't heard of the Great Pumpkin, it's a great trick to have. Grab all your kids' candy, say the Great Pumpkin came, give them a gift card in the morning, and send that chocolate off to the office so that we can let them rot their teeth. At least that's what happens in this household, and I should happen in more. And thank you for tuning in today to Geek Out for our interview with Nitin Bhandari. To read all our news stories, learn more about our guests, and to listen to this show, visit thecontentcrew.com. This is The Content Crew signing out. Until next time, enjoy the ride. And geek out.